Today is February the 5th, and it happens to be the anniversary of an event that took place 426 years ago. It was on February the 5th, 1597, that 26 Christians were crucified on a hill outside of Nagasaki, Japan. Now, we don't normally associate Christianity with the country of Japan. In fact, today, just 1.5% of the population of Japan identifies as Christian. On the other hand, 79% of them identify as practicing Shinto beliefs, and 66% adhere to Buddhism. And yes, those numbers add up to more than 100%. Because many Japanese practice both Shintoism and Buddhism. It's kind of like saying that your favorite make of car is Ford and Chevy. They do that over there. The first known Europeans to set foot in Japan were three Portuguese sailors. In 1543, they were sailing for China when a storm blew them off course and they landed in Japan. Their cargo included firearms, which greatly impressed the Japanese, who had not seen these. The Portuguese quickly figured out the trading potential opportunities with this new land, and so they began sending ships there. Now, at the time, the Portuguese were indeed the finest sailors in the world, but still, I cannot stress what a remarkable achievement it was to be able to sail a ship from Portugal all the way to Japan. Their ships would leave from Lisbon and then sail south all the way around Africa, past the Cape of Good Hope with its treacherous water currents. They would then sail up the east side of Africa to India, then around India and around China and up north to Japan. It's a remarkable journey. Now, within just 6 years of the Portuguese landing in Japan, Christian missionaries arrived there. The first missionary to Japan was Father Francis Xavier. Xavier was Spanish by birth. In addition to his extensive missionary work across the East, he was also one of the co-founders of the Jesuit order. And it didn't take long for the Jesuits in Japan to develop a complex and comprehensive network of missionaries. And they experienced tremendous success in converting the Japanese to the Christian faith. And while I have no doubt that the intentions of these missionaries were pure, that their desire was to bring the gospel of Christ to the people of Japan, there were also other forces at work. In addition to matters of faith, there was also power and money at stake. The Portuguese were eager to develop trade with the Japanese, and they were also in competition with the Spanish and the Dutch, who were also trying to make inroads in Japan. And one of the strategies employed by the Portuguese when they arrived in a new place was to introduce the Christian faith. If they could convert the people to the religion of the Portuguese, that would facilitate trade. So the Portuguese actively encouraged and supported the Jesuits in their missionary endeavors. And it worked, because just 26 years after Father Xavier's arrival, the Pope himself issued a decree that the church in Japan belonged to the Portuguese, which gave the Jesuits exclusive rights to spread the faith in Japan, and it meant that their sponsors, the Portuguese, of all the Catholics through the world, had exclusive rights to trade in that country. The Japanese, of course, were also hoping to develop trade relations with the West. The feudal lords were especially interested in purchasing weapons. Both the imperial government and the military leaders supported the Catholic missionaries. They not only wanted trade with Europe, but they also hoped that the spread of the Christian religion might erode the power of the Buddhist monks. It's very complicated. It is estimated that the Jesuits converted 300,000 Japanese to Christianity. However, by the late 1500s, the trading relationships between Japan and the West began to sour. The Japanese government was becoming suspicious of this foreign influence, and they feared colonialism. Christianity was viewed as a threat to their security. And then, in 1596, there was the San Felipe incident. The San Felipe was a Spanish ship that had run aground on the island of Shinkoku in Japan, and the ship's cargo, which included weapons, was seized by the local authorities. And then, for reasons that are not clear, the pilot of this particular ship revealed to the Japanese that it was indeed the practice of the Spanish to have missionaries infiltrate a country before an eventual military conquest. He pointed out how this had worked so well both in the Americas and in the Philippines. And this information only confirmed the fear of the Japanese, who began to crack down on missionary activities. And it didn't help that the Western missionaries and their governments were often in conflict among themselves as they competed for Japan's attention. Franciscans from Spain had now arrived and were proselytizing in the capital. The Jesuits appealed to the government to have them stop. The Dutch, who were Protestant, of course, were arming the locals against the Catholics. It was not Christianity's finest hour. The San Felipe incident set off a round of persecution against Christians and missionaries. And the first of these persecutions took place in Nagasaki. 26 Christians, 6 Westerners, and 20 Japanese were rounded up and arrested. For several weeks, they were tortured and paraded through villages across Japan to discourage people from following Christianity, even to renounce their faith. And on February the 5th, 1597, these 6 were taken to a hill outside Nagasaki, and they were tied to crosses. Soldiers then impaled them with spears until they died. These were not the only martyrs in Japan. In all, about 400 Christians were executed in one way or another. By 1630, roughly 33 years after the first persecution, Christianity had been eradicated in Japan. And in 1639, all foreigners were expelled from the country. Now, I realize that I've just dumped a lot of history on you. And trust me when I tell you, that was the abbreviated version. But no doubt the work of these missionaries in Japan is inspiring. Can you imagine setting aside years of your life to make an impossibly dangerous journey to the other side of the world to bring the gospel to a foreign people? But what about these martyrs? Those who gave their lives in the name of their Lord. So many of them could simply have renounced their beliefs and just walked away with their lives. And that is what many did. But 400 of them refused, and through their deaths, they lived their faith for all to see. The word martyr, it means witness. And yes, these people witnessed their faith to the end. I chose our gospel reading today from the book of Matthew. This passage is part of Jesus' great sermon that we call the Sermon on the Mount. And the sermon starts off with the Beatitudes, those statements that begin with the word blessed. And as I read these words of Jesus, these Beatitudes, I urge you to consider the sacrifice of the Japanese martyrs. Jesus said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Blessed are the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. Blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. And then immediately following these Beatitudes, Jesus says to the crowd, You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under a bushel basket. No, they put it up on a lampstand where it may give light to the entire house. And then Jesus concludes saying, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. As I read these words, salt and light, I think of those martyrs. Their actions are of someone wholly committed to following Christ. They are called to act in a certain way as salt, as light. And the thing about salt and light is that salt and light are not the thing. Salt and light enhance the thing. We use salt to enhance the flavors of our food. Green beans are good. Green beans with salt, much better. French fries, collards, most anything tastes better with a pinch of salt. My favorite flavor of ice cream is not just caramel, but salted caramel. It is to die for. But salt's not the thing. I mean, if salt were so good, why don't we just sit down with a big scoop of salt? We don't. Light's the same way. Light is not the thing. Light illumines so that we might see the thing. The most beautiful arrangement of flowers is nothing without light to see it. Jesus instructs his followers to be salt, to be light, because it's not about them, but how they enhance the thing. They are to be like a city on a hill, something to be seen by all. Nobody, he says, lights a lamp and then puts it under a bucket. That would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? No. When you light a lamp, you put it up where it gives light to all the world, where everyone can see. The followers of Jesus are to be a light that shines. So what does it mean to be light? As Jesus tells the crowd, our light is the good work performed in the name of God. When we bring glory to God, then we are light. The salt of the earth are those who point the world towards God. They enhance the flavor of this reality. They make it better. For me, as a person of faith, as I hear the story of these martyrs, I'm also able to glimpse the presence of God. It is their light which shines. And we must never forget also the martyrs and the saints who have gone before, who have paved the road of our faith. As Christians, we are called to be salt. We're called to be light, whether it's in our daily lives or as a church. Our job is to be salt and light, and through our works of compassion and love, we are to let the world know that God is here with us. As a church, we must be intentional in our actions. We must be the light of Christ, and we are. In Lebanon, for over 60 years, this church has been the chartering organization for this Boy Scout troop. And the values of scouting is to create better citizens, better people, to make the world a better place by, well, being trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. As a church, this past Thursday, we provided food in a warm and safe space to 13 women who had no other place to stay. In March, two of you will travel to Guatemala as medical missionaries, and we need to raise $1,000 to support them in their efforts. And then back in October, we bagged 10,000 meals for Rise Against Hunger. And those meals, as we speak, are making their way across the ocean to Africa. 10,000 meals. Each of these is a light. You as individuals do so much in the name of Christ. You are salt, you are light, and we are blessed to live in a time and place where our light is allowed to shine for all to see. And we've got to make sure that we never put a bushel basket over our light. Finally, as I mentioned earlier, in the 1630s, Japan's military-led government initiated a series of laws which imposed an isolationist foreign policy on their nation. Relations between Japan and other countries were severely limited, if not cut off completely. Nearly all foreign nationals were banned from entering the country. Japan shut the door on the world. This isolationism remained in place for 265 years until 1853. And it was then that U.S. President Millard Fillmore sent a naval expedition to the east, and this expedition was led by Commodore Matthew Perry. And the principal purpose of this expedition was to open relationships with Japan. That took a while, but eventually they were successful. Once Westerners were allowed in Japan, do you know what they discovered? Christians. There were about 30,000 Christians in Japan practicing their faith in secret. They are known as the Kakure Kirishitan, or the Hidden Christians. When religious freedom was reestablished, they were then free to come out into the light. But for 250 years, they had worshiped in secret, sharing their faith from generation to generation. Now, their Christian practices would really be unrecognizable to us today because they had adapted over the years to preserve their secrecy and their lives. For example, they had statues of the Virgin Mary, but these have been redesigned to resemble a Buddhist goddess, so no one would suspect anything. Their prayers were written to sound like Buddhist chants, even though they still contained words in Latin, Spanish, and Portuguese. Their Bibles and liturgies were passed down orally because printed books were forbidden. And they still remembered those whose lives had been taken so long ago. But the light of their faith continued to shine. Yes, they were forced to hide that light under a basket, but as soon as they were able to remove the basket, they did. And their light shined so that even today, we might be inspired by their faith. Amen.